Translation. Fulfilling my desire and sacrificing his own promise, he got down from the chariot, took up its wheel, and ran towards me hurriedly, just like a lion goes to kill an elephant. He even dropped his outer garment on the way. Prabhupada by Swami says, Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srivopada Ki Jai. The battle of Kurukshetra was fought on military principles, but at the same time in a sporting spirit, like a friend's fight with another friend. Duryodhana criticized Bhishmadev, alleging that he was reluctant to kill Arjuna because of paternal affection. A Kshatriya cannot tolerate insults on the principle of fighting. Bhishmadev therefore promised that the next day he would kill all five Pandavas with special weapons made for the purpose. Duryodhana was satisfied, and he kept the arrow with him to be delivered the next day during the fight. By tricks, Arjuna took the arrows from Duryodhana, and Bhishmadev could understand that this was a trick of Lord Krishna. So he took the vow that the next day Krishna would have to take up weapons himself, otherwise his friend Arjuna would die. In the next day's fighting, Bhishmadev fought so violently that both Arjuna and Krishna were in trouble. Arjuna was almost defeated. The situation was so tense that he was about to be killed by Bhishmadev. The very next moment, at that time, Lord Krishna wanted to please his devotee Bhishma by keeping Bhishma's promise, which was more important than his own. Seemingly, he broke his own promise. He promised before the beginning of the Battle of Kurukshetra that he would remain without weapons and would not use his strength for either of the parties. But to protect Arjuna, he got down from the chariot, took up the wheel of the chariot, and hurriedly rushed at Bhishmadev in an angry mood, as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He dropped his covering cloth on the way, and out of great anger, he did not even know that he had dropped it. Bhishmadev at once gave up his weapons and stood to be killed by Krishna, his beloved Lord. The fighting of the day was over. The fighting of the day was thus ended at that very moment, and Arjuna was saved. Of course, there was no possibility of Arjuna's death because the Lord himself was on the chariot. But because Bhishmadev wanted to see Lord Krishna take up some weapon to save his friend, the Lord created this situation, making Arjuna's death imminent. He stood before Bhishmadev to show him that his promise was fulfilled and that he had taken up the wheel. In the purport. Omagyantanandasya gyanan gyanan salakaya chakshur majam natasmai sri gurave namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutare Simhati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitya Namani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nevishesha Shandavari Pasarasthanine. Translation again. Fulfilling my desire, this is Bhishmadev speaking. Fulfilling my desire and sacrificing his own promise, he got down from the chariot, took up its wheel, and ran towards me hurriedly, just as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He even dropped his outer garment on the way. This is the Bhishmadev's consciousness at the time of leaving his body. He's remembering Krishna. Smarnam. All the great rishis, demigods, warriors were there. And after Bhishmadev gave his instructions, right, and the Varnashram, etc., he gave many instructions. And now he's going to wind up his pastime, wind up his life. And so he's focusing on Krishna, because he said, I'm so fortunate that Krishna has come before me. My worshipful Lord has come before me at that time. And how lucky he is, just like Haridas Thakur, that was his desire, Lord. When I can't be here when you leave your body. I have to leave before you. So when he asked Lord Chaitanya, his desire was to see him when he left his body. And Lord Chaitanya granted that desire, visiting him at the Siddhavokal in Puri. And he held the Lord's feet on his chest and gazed in his eyes. Eyes were wandering around his face like bumblebees, he said. And then he gave up his body. Perfect. That's the opportunity you get if you're actually on the taken birth when Krishna's appearing in the Prakat Leela. Very rare. But he's lucky. So here's Bhishmadev. He's remembering Krishna about the fighting, how his, because that's his bhav. It's like one of the sub ecstasies of bhava. You can read in the nectar of devotion, like yudhya vira, something like that. The different ecstasies and different sub ecstasies. So he was a kshatriya. So this is how he liked to see Krishna. That was his thing. When Krishna was acting as a kshatriya with the reins in one hand and a whip in the other, he was there for Arjuna. This was Bhishma's meditation. So he's in great ecstasy seeing this. This is difficult to understand. You know, someone's rushing at you to kill you. How would you feel? You know. But he's thinking, look, Krishna's so beautiful. He's coming at me to kill me. Wow, look, he's running to me as fast like a lion rushes to kill an elephant. They go very fast, the lions. And look, he's dropped his cloth. He's noticing all these little details. His charter's blown off. And he's not even picking it up. He's so angry. He's coming towards me. He's so beautiful. Look at Krishna. The arrow. He's got marks on him. I mean, shooting my arrows at him. But they're like, you know, decorations on his face. And his hair is a little ashen from the dust in the fight. So beautiful, Krishna. And he's coming to look at him. I just love that. Because he's a kshatriya, you know. So he loves that. This is his actual meditation. So he's not thinking, he's not afraid for his life. Because Bhishma's a very special character. He could leave his body when he wanted to. He got that benediction. But this is his, you know, this is a perfection for those in that particular ras. Krishna rushing at you. Arjuna's trying to stop him. Arjuna runs behind trying to grab him. Because he promised not to, take any weapons. Krishna told Duryodhana and Arjuna, I give a benediction. They went to see him in the morning. Duryodhana, he went to the Krishna was resting, so Duryodhana went right close to his chest. Arjuna stood at his feet. And because he was going to give a benediction, Duryodhana wanted to be right up front, but actually, you know, when you open your eyes, you see a head first. So he first saw Arjuna. So he said, Arjuna, what would you like? The decision was, you can have me or my army. And Arjuna said, I'll choose you. He said, but I'm not going to fight. But you can have me or my army. So Arjuna said, I'll choose you. Duryodhana was sweating at that time, you know, because, wow, what a jerk. I mean, what a fool. He's saying, oh, great. That's what he would have chose the army anyway. But, of course, you can have everything. If you don't have Krishna, then what's the use? So he was very happy to get the army. Krishna promised that he wouldn't take part in the fight. But now, his pure devotee, because of the tricks, Bhishma has some very special arrows consecrated that would kill the Pandavas. We heard the story, full story the other day. they were, you know, he put so many mantras and things like that. Because when those kshatriyas fought, Arjuna, he got all those celestial weapons. he would touch water, on the chariot. Those chariots are big, you know. They're huge. They weren't simple things. They had all kinds of weapons and big, you know, stocks of weapons, different weapons. And you used to have archmen, Kabul. So So when he would invoke that particular deva who gave him the weapon, and he would invoke that deva, he would see him actually on the appear on the arrow. Then he wouldn't miss. And so he was known as the expert bowman, right? He would shoot with all the millions of enemies in front of him. He would clear a space of 1.5 miles. I mean, he could shoot 1.5 miles. All those coming towards him, he would make a gap like 1.5 miles wide. And it says you couldn't tell when his hand was taking the bow from the quiver, when he was putting it, when he was drawing it back. It was just like a complete circle. He was had that shakti, that siddhi, the ability that he was blessed with. So it's like a machine gun, more or less, you know. It was so fast. It was just clearing a mile and a half of... Krishna has to... He wants to relieve the burden of the earth, right, with these unnecessary kshatriyas. So you've got to do something special. And also, Bhishma, he knows that Arjuna can't be actually killed because Krishna's on the chariot. And he knows the Pandavas can't be defeated. He told Duryodhana so many times. He said, you're not going to defeat it, no matter what. As long as Krishna's on their side, you don't have any chance. He didn't like to hear that. Whose side are you on anyway? You're supposed to be encouraging us. He said, well, let's face it, facts are facts. If Krishna's there, what chance do you stand? So he knew he couldn't be killed while Krishna was on the chariot. And in fact, after the battle, they came on the chariot, Krishna and Arjuna. After that finished, then Krishna told Arjuna, get off the chariot and go over there. They were a little puzzled. So Arjuna got off, did what he said, he got the chariot instead. Then Krishna got off and went over there, then the chariot just disintegrated. He said, what happened? He said, this chariot has been hit by so many astras from the opposing side. it should have been destroyed many times, but because I was there, I nullified it. So now they're getting the result later, so. So you can't, Krishna Raki Marahi, Raki Krishna Marahi. If Krishna wants to protect you, no one can kill you. And if Krishna wants to kill you, no one can protect you. So that was a fate. And Krishna announced that before the battle, except for you Pandavas, everyone's going to be finished on this battlefield. So this is the thing that's going on here. With the storyline is the whole battle and everything, but here we're bringing out the mood of the bhakti, the love of Bhishma Dev and Krishna. And it was it says here, at that time, Krishna, wanting to please his devotee, Bhishma, by keeping Bhishma's promise, which was more important than his own. So he broke his own. Krishna loves his devotees more than himself, just like the pure devotees, they love Krishna more than their own life. And it's the same with Krishna. He'd do anything, please, because he states, as you surrender unto me, I will reciprocate accordingly. So those who completely surrender to Krishna, then Krishna completely surrenders to those. Srila Prabhupada says, you can have Krishna in your pocket if you surrender to him. That's what it is. Except for some of the great, great devotees we hear about, like the gopis, which Bhishma also mentions a little later. He's talking about this. He knows them. He's a Mahajan, he knows everything. He's glorifying the gopis also, who managed to have that amorous connection with Krishna. But they were so surrendered, Krishna said, I can't match that. I can't match your surrender. I can't repay you for your undivided love. Because, you know, one reason, there were several reasons, but one reason was that the gopis, they love Krishna 100%, everyone, the main gopis. And Krishna, he couldn't love everyone 100%. He had to love them all equally. So he's only got 100%. They've got 100%. They're giving 100% to Krishna, but he's got to give 100% to so many. How can he do it? It's a little perplexed. So he said, "I'm sorry, I can't match this kind of thing. You'll have to be satisfied with your own pious activities." Yeah, so that's the reciprocation. That's Krishna's reciprocation with his pure devotees. Like also when who was it? Sudama, he went to Dwarka. Sudama was Krishna's friend at the school, Sandipanimani's gurukul. But he lived in abject poverty, Sudama. Partly because one time when they got stuck in the forest, when the storm came, they got lost in the forest. Sandipani Muni and the others came out to search for them in the morning. While they were there, it was wet, it was cold, and they were hungry, and Sudama had some chickpeas in his pocket, jola. And he just had a little bit, so he was eating them, and Krishna heard, "What's that?" "Oh, nothing. Because he only had a few. So he said because of that, he didn't give any to Krishna, he kept it on. So he had to experience this living with nothing. Because he didn't give Krishna any chickpeas. But anyways, he was a little proud of that. Even though. He was a little proud that he took the vrata that he would never beg. He would never, whatever came of his own accord, he would accept that. So he's a little proud of that little thing. So of course, it's not the proper thing to do if you're in the grihastha ashram, because you gotta think of your partner also. So they were skinny and weak. But he was a Brahmin, so he's happy. But she said, "Please go to Krishna. I can't live in this poverty like this all the time. Please go to your friend Krishna. He's a king, practically. He's a big prince." So he said, "Huh? I thought it was a good idea, and I can see Krishna also." But he said, "What can we take him when you go? You should give her a present." But he didn't have anything. There was nothing in the house. So then he went and begged for the locals, and they gave him some chip rice. Or cracked rice. It may not have been chira, it may have been uncooked rice, broken rice, different colors, you know. So he tied that in his cloth and went. When Krishna saw that, after he welcomed him, Krishna received him, washed his feet and everything, worshipped him as he does the brahmanas, asked about his welfare, and then he said, "What he got in that?" And he was so ashamed because Krishna's palace was gorgeous, you know, dripping with opulence, and Lakshmi was there serving, and you know, he had a little bit of baked rice, you know. He was so ashamed to, "I can't give Krishna this." But anyway, Krishna snatched it and ate it, and he was going to eat more, but Devi stopped him. So, and I think Krishna gave him a cow at that time, but he stayed some time, and then he bid farewell and saw him off. And Sridhar was in such bliss seeing Krishna that he forgot what he went for. He was meant to ask him for some help. So he forgot all about that. But when he got back, then he found that his cottage had turned into a palace with servants, and it was really, really opulent. So the acharyas are saying, why didn't Krishna give anything to Sridhar when he came there? He said, well, Krishna was also, at that time, he was also embarrassed or stuck, because what Sridhar
Sudama, sorry.
Sudama, he didn't have anything, right? So he had to beg that rice. So he gave more than what he had, in other words. So Krishna thinks, how can I do that? Everything is mine. How can I give more than what I have? So therefore he was a little embarrassed, so he didn't mention it. So he just gave him a token. When he got home, he changed his accommodation to a beautiful palace and opulence. And that was also because he was a little proud of his renunciation, so Krishna also rubbed that off by giving him a very opulent situation. So this is Krishna's dealings with his devotees. So of course it's pastime for Krishna. He's actually angry. He takes up the wheel and he's angry, rushing at him. This is to fill the desire of Bhishmadev. Because I promised Krishna would break his promise of not fighting, otherwise Arjuna was going to go back to the spiritual world. So Krishna wanted to fulfill the promise of his pure devotee. So this is why he did it. But he did it in such a mood that Bhishma would appreciate. You know, he was angry and rushing at him as a kachya to kill him. So he was noticing all these little details of Krishna. He wasn't concerned. He's going to afraid for our life. We'd be afraid for our lives, right? But no, he's noticing all these little details about Krishna. So he's relating these stories, different stories of Krishna. He's done his business. Krishna's asked him to speak on Dharma, proper Dharma. Then he's glorifying Krishna for his activities, his friendship, his qualities, his beauty. They're letting everyone know this is his perfection. He's going to remember this. This is his last. All these different aspects of Krishna, but especially that one because that's his bhav. And now he's gonna leave his body, close his eyes, and remembering that after seeing Krishna face to face, then he's gonna exit the material world. So of course, Krishna is not. There's no reason for Krishna to be angry, right? Because Krishna has nothing to lose. We get angry when there's something to lose. But Krishna has nothing to lose. Everything is his. And he can have whatever he wants. So there's no fear for Krishna. There's no loss for Krishna. And there's no gain for Krishna. So that's why Krishna is very difficult to understand. And his pure devotees. Because they don't act like we act. To improve our condition. We're acting for safety and to improve our condition for pleasure. But Krishna's not motivated like that. Therefore, he's very difficult to understand. Everything is his. He has, you know, he is Atmarama. He's perfectly satisfied. Also, his devotees are in that position. But for his pleasure, then he arranges these things. I mean, life is all about experience. Jai Sri Radha Gopal Nanda Sri Ramakrishna Tagore Ki Jai. So life is about experience. We like good experience, but we like other experiences also. We like excitement, right? You pay money to go on some ride, which is exciting, or do something. We like that. We like excitement. We like pleasure. But we want experience. We want different relationships. So that's what Krishna is doing here. And in the material world, it's slightly different from the spiritual world, but it's more or less the same. So when Krishna gets angry, that he wants to please Bhishma by doing that. Also, when the Krishna sometimes covers himself, or not himself, Yogamaya covers Krishna. So Yogamaya covers him, so he actually forgets who he is, or forgets his potency. Muddat is called that potency of Yogamaya. So there, so Yogamaya Devi and others, they're so trusted by Krishna that they can exert power over him, and he can be subordinate to them for the lila, for the different experience. Otherwise, if you're all powerful and all knowing, you're all powerful and you're the actual creator and maintainer, destroyer, and then it wouldn't be much fun, right? If you can imagine, if you was in that position, if you knew everything, past, present, and future, you do anything you want, you can change anything how you like, it wouldn't be very interesting, right? A little couple of weeks or so, you'd be bored stiff, right? No fun. So therefore, to have surprises, to have something unusual or unexpected, you know, if you're God, you're going to know everything, so that if you know future, you can't be surprised. you'll exactly know what's going on. So therefore, he allows himself to be covered by his own potency, so he can have different experiences. That's what we like, right? Different experiences. We're part of God. he's the supreme enjoyer, and this is how he enjoys. If you think about it deeply, then Krishna's pretty ideal person. I mean, you probably wouldn't do better if we were God, right? If we were God, first of all, we wouldn't be a cowherd man, right? Walk around with bare feet and a stick, right? That's for sure. You wouldn't think of that one. But he does. So why planet of cows, why he keeps cows. But if you think about it also, it's a very good ambience for the doing what he wants to do, that is experiencing different ras, different exchanges with these different devotees, different categories of devotees. So it's actually an ideal situation. Because in the morning he can go out with his friends with no parental control. You know, they can have a good time, you know. Right? Parents are always worried, don't climb the tree, you're going to do it. They're gone, you know, so they can really have a good time. And then he'll, midday, then he'll go and see his girlfriends, right, looking for the calves, while the others are taking rest. Then he'll experience those amorous pastimes with them. Then he'll come back, then they'll go home. And then he experiences Vatsalya Bhav with his parents and elders. So that's the cycle. So it's actually a perfect ambience. If you go out in the pasture grounds, you can get away from everyone. And then you can have that scene. So, of course, it doesn't matter what situation it is. He's always enjoying, even in Dwarka, or Ayodhya, he's doing the same thing. He's engaging in pastimes of pleasure, reciprocating with his particular devotees. So the ambience or the circumstance that is just there to enhance the particular mood or the flavor of that particular place, planet, or whatever, or the changing of the times of the day, or the changing of the moods. It's like here we have three modes of nature. They have a three modes of, they have Sambit, Sandini, and Haladini. And they also, just like here it's in the Bhagavad Gita, it says these three modes of nature always competition for predominance. So one time one mode is prominent, one time is another, the other is subdued. So like that also in the spiritual world. The Sambit, Sandini, and the Haladini, and when each one is present, it creates a different mood. Like the Santini, you see everything's fabulous. All the field, the everything that's there, you know, the land, the trees, the people, the cows, everything. It's fantastic. It's really something special, you know. And nowadays you get those, you make a photo and it's all highlighted and saturated colors and it's, you know, super, super real. So spiritual world is something like that. It's fantastic. It never gets tired, boring. It actually changes. He said when you've appreciated something in the spiritual world, for whatever quality it has, then it changes. In even inert things. He said, it's like the chandelier. You may appreciate the beautiful chandelier. When you've appreciated it, then it changes. Then you can appreciate it again. Then it can change again, like that. So that's with all the particular moves. So whatever it is, and the sambit potency, then it's the, you know, it's that understanding of everything. That's prominent. And then there you get that magnificence, that, oh, you know, tingling. And then the Haladini, when that's prominent, then that's, you get those atmospheres like, you know, pure love, different types of love, that being prominent then, within all that. So that's changing also. According to the desire of Krishna, Yogamaya, Krishna's Ichcha Shakti. So he gives them that prerogative to set this, just like we have in minute independence. They also have a lot of independence. So they can actually run the whole ambience of the spiritual world. And they make arrangements for Krishna. Like Vrinda Devi has all kinds of go-downs in the forest of Vrindavan. And they're thinking what kind of atmosphere we can create for different type of pleasure for Krishna. And she has all her assistants, and they, according to what they plan, how are we going to arrange for different type of pleasure for Krishna? So they arrange it like that. So Krishna gives them that prerogative, so he doesn't really know what's going to happen, because, you know, he doesn't want to think forward anyway. But his godhood is actually covered by the love he has for his devotees and the love that his devotees have for him. So therefore, it doesn't really matter what the situation is, and even in the material world, it doesn't even really matter what the situation is. So you see, even on the battlefield, which is pretty intense. You know, when there's a battle about to start, it's not very nice. You know, your adrenaline's running, your body's perspiring, everything wants to come out your body. It's a fearful situation. But even in that situation, Krishna's there. He's in the middle of it's about to be a fratricidal war. There's going to be millions of people killed. They know it. And Krishna's there smiling in the middle of the two armies with Arjuna. Arjuna's perplexed by Yogamaya. And Arjuna's speaking to him. Krishna's speaking to him, and Krishna's smiling. And his hair is moving in the wind, and his shada is blowing in the wind. Oh dear. And the sages, saw that picture, they said, oh, this picture, seeing Krishna like that, this is worth the whole battle. Millions of lives being... Just by seeing this picture, it's worth it. So it doesn't matter on the material situation, because Krishna has nothing to do with it. It's just an inferior energy. But it's acting, it's supporting his pastimes also. So it doesn't really matter what the situation is. So it says there's no material impediment to prevent you from becoming Krishna conscious. There's no material impediment. There's nothing material to stop you from surrendering to Krishna now. That's a fact. I mean, the worst thing is you could have a lot of pain, so it would dub it. But still, even in that, you could surrender to Krishna. And sometimes excess pain, you want to surrender to Krishna, right? So get rid of it. it doesn't depend on the material situation. But because we're so conditioned into thinking where this body is part of this material world, then we're always trying to adjust our life so that, you know, it'd be easier for us to surrender to Krishna. But it's not necessary. We can surrender to Krishna anytime. And anyway, now's the best time. So if you want to try and make it better, then you may actually leave this time and go, you know, you're looking to the future. Then that's not Krishna, not in the future, he's now. Our Krishna consciousness is in the present moment. So then, you know, we're doing it because we think we'd be more comfortable, it'd be easier us to remember Krishna. So you could be remembering Krishna now, so you're actually leaving remembering Krishna to do something so you can remember Krishna later. This is Maya. This is how we condition. There's nothing to stop us from surrendering to Krishna right now. But we think we need a good situation to surrender to Krishna. And of course, it is helpful, obviously. You know, you've got an environment like this, fantastic for remembering Krishna. So it needs some work and some preparations ahead. But anyway, we conditioned souls. We got to go through this process of, you know, to wear out, you know, get over the idea that, you know, we're going to create a nice situation and then we're going to surrender to Krishna. So Prabhupada said, that will never happen, though. You're going to control your senses, then you're peaceful, then you can remember Krishna without any worry. Right? So let's work on controlling the senses. You could be remembering Krishna, you could be serving Krishna right now instead of trying to control your senses. As soon as you remember Krishna, your senses are controlled. Right? As soon as you engage, because remembering Krishna means also service, also followed by service. So then your senses are actually controlled. The senses are perfect. They're engaged in doing what they're supposed to be doing. So then all this the material world becomes superficial. So this is what we see going on in this pastime. The actually in place, all that is all superficial. But it's great. It's fantastic. Bhishma's laying on a bed of arrows. They shoot arrows in the floor and make a bed for him. He lays on that. He's a kachya. That's great, you know. And far out, you say. And everyone's coming, the demigods are there, the rishis are there, the warriors are there. It's a grand sight, it's a big momentous thing after the battle. Fantastic situation. So he creates that, but the main thing is, it could have been any situation. But this is a situation there to show that, of course, during the battle also, anyone who saw Krishna during the battle or died seeing Krishna in the battle, they go back to Godhead also. So for us, we can also take these lessons that we don't have to really worry too much about the future, making the future nice, and then we can surrender to Krishna, which is quite a big time taker in our lives, let's face it. But remember, in Satyayuga, if we were human beings, that was in Satyayuga, everything was fantastic. Right? The government were Krishna conscious. Everything was favorable. You didn't have to work. Right? You'd live for 100,000 years. There was no, that means practically no old age, no disease. You didn't have to work. Right? You throw the seeds on the floor, they grow. You don't have to plow. You don't have to. Still, we're here in Kali Yuga. What happened? If we were humans, that was. But even the perfect environment is not a guarantee that you're going to go back to Krishna. We've got to surrender to Krishna. If you're surrendering to the environment to change, to make the world a better place, of course, that's our mission also, by giving Krishna consciousness to people. It's a much easier opportunity, but you see, it wasn't. The people are still here on the heavenly planets. It's nice. There are no problems. But how many of the demigods go back to Godhead from the heavenly planets? Don't hear it. Eh? No one goes back from there. Not that they really want. It's so nice they don't want to leave. That's the problem. You make it nice, then you won't enjoy it. That's a natural inclination. Because the two things that we're doing in our life, one is trying to make the world nice, These are through desires, and these are the things that promote activity in the material world. We're trying to make the future nice, and then when it's nice, we'll enjoy it. So as soon as the trouble stops, the next thing is, how can I enjoy it? Right? As soon as our problems are taken care of, we finished work, taken our bath, taken our meal, nothing to do, right? Now you can enjoy, think about it. You've got the rent paid, and right? Then this is what it's all about, working. It's all about that, isn't it? Reaching that point where you've got your breakfast tomorrow, you got your rent paid, now this is what it's all about. Now what are you going to do? Enjoy. Right? You're working so hard for that. So it's like that. When the going gets good, then you forget. Okay, now it's an opportunity to enjoy. That's the material world. So we have this. We're conditioned like that. We got to make it good, then we can enjoy. So we got to make it good, then we can surrender to Krishna. We get rid of all those problems. Then we can peacefully serve Krishna without any noise. But it doesn't work like that. It doesn't happen like that. This is the time to. You have any time is now to surrender to Krishna. So Krishna's showing, and even in the material world, all these serious things that are going on, what we call serious things, Krishna goes through all those things, right? All the demons, armies, monsters, whatever, biggest things. But Krishna's carrying on as normal with his friends and his devotees. And the only problem is generally the separation of Krishna. That's really the only problem. And that separation is caused, that feeling of separation is caused by love. The pain of separation is because of love. That's the cause of it. If you don't love something, you don't miss it. It's only because you love something you're going to miss it. So that's the other end of, the two poles of love. One is the sambhog, and one is the vipalamba, the separation. they're different experiences of love, but the vipalamba is more intense. But that's it must be based on love, because if it wasn't love, you won't feel any separation. But first, to feel separation, there has to be attachment and love, of course. So that we're working for that. So that seems to be the main thing with any problems you see in Krishna's pastimes. And Ramananda Roy says, when he was asked what is the worst kind of suffering, he said separation from the devotees. I can't see anything worse than that. Because there, when you see the devotee, you see Krishna. They're reminding you of Krishna. The world should become a little more superficial. In other words, a devotee should become indifferent to the material world. And Prabhupada said the best way to control the mind is neglect. So you should be a little indifferent, understand what it is, you know, nothing here, actually. But, you've got to maintain this particular body and go through life. But that should be just second like a hobby. But the main thing is we want to remember Krishna within that. That's all. And here we're given all these stories, and this one especially, how you can, you know, remember Krishna after all of the in any type of dire circumstance. So that's what Bhishma Dev is revealing amongst many great personalities. So they're going to take his word seriously, because he's the Mahajan. And this is his conclusion. Now he's just talking about how wonderful Krishna is. He's looking at him, noticing all the detail, how his cloth, his yellow cloth is sparkling, the folds in his yellow cloth, they catch the light, and like lightning streaks. He's noticing all these little things about Krishna. Now he's going to just hold that picture in memories. And he's going to leave his body. So this is one of the success stories in Srimad Bhagavatam. His passing away of Bhishma, and Lord Krishna's kindly appeared before him. So we pray that Radha Gokul Nanda Sitaram, Lakshmana Hanuman, And Gaur Nitai will bless us with that same opportunity, that when we leave our bodies, we'll be able to be absorbed in the memory of Krishna. Wonderful Krishna. Jai Sama Bhagatam Ki Jai.